Nish bod sio gyf sian has Paddy Vaughan ys gara gart. Agus togw, wel fi gyda gylori Paddy na fi siog, but chael siai agus a Merle. Well, we change to English, Paddy, because you feel more comfortable with
would being. I?
Well, could you tell me a bit of your background, Paddy? You talked to me the last day on Friday there about your grandmother coming from.
She was married to a man called Vaughan. And she was originally McGinley, and she was a poor woman anyway, but she stayed in a place called Drumnamona, and then eventually she came to this house down here beside McCloskey's. It was a house belonging to Leitrim. There were two houses in it.
Just in Carrigart here?
That's down in Carrigart, down to get. She came there in 1903.
Did she buy it off?
No, she rented it for about six or eight shillings a year, and she was there for until she died, and then we lived there. Then we're living here, I would say 45 or coming on 50 years, you know. And she was down there. She looked after the dispensary for McCloskey, and she was before that she worked in the old Rorapenna, you know.
Right.
A lot of women worked there and post what you call skivvies and worked in the hotel, washing dishes and one thing and another.
But that was originally a hotel built by.
It was built by a man called Mickey Freel. He was from over there, Glenrae, and he came out of Scotland and he built that. But there was a shibbing in it before that, but now who had it I don't know. But the old shibbing is just down at the back of our house, and I was always told that the man that was there, he committed suicide by hanging, and that's just where you go in the back gate, and that was what you call a shebeen. And
right, well, we'll go back to your grandmother's home. She rented.
Yes.
She rented from Lord Leitrim.
She did, aye. And she lived there then, and she reared Barney and Joe and James and Paddy, which was my father. And she worked away there, and she worked then in later years with McCloskey.
And he was the doctor?
He was the doctor of the time.
Right.
The man previous to that was Dr. Christie. But now, he was from the same area in question as Dr. McCloskey from County Derry, Dungiven. And McCloskey there, he was here for 40-something odd years. He died in 48. And he done everything, you know, and she cleaned out the dispensary and all that. And suppose, I don't know at that time whether it was a health board or what it was. Probably a lot of it depended on the doctor himself, what he'd done and what he didn't, you know. He bought turf, and he bought turf there, a bag of turf every week for the fire in the dispensary. The dispensary consisted of just on a Tuesday from 11 to 1, you know. And you'd have maybe the people that would come there, maybe five or six people. So one oil faces all the time, you know. But I don't think there was as much sickness then as now, you know. But she worked with him anyway, and then she died when she was over 80. So she worked a long, long time with him, you know.
And could you tell me about, explain to me the name Vaughan? You said he was a tailor.
Vaughan originally came from Oma. And they came to Letterkenny now. How they came there, I don't know, but there was one of them, he was a coal merchant, and he would be a brother of this Paddy's. And this man was a tailor. He was what you call a journeyman tailor. He was here and he was there and he was all over.
He travelled to areas for a couple of weeks.
He worked down the street with a man named McBride. Because
his name was Paddy Vaughan as well.
He was.
Right.
But where he went, he was a boozer, I would think. But you never queried or asked anything, you know, but where he went or what happened to him, probably maybe buried in a pauper's grave, you know. He went away then, and there were relations, the same relations as Letterkenny, you see. There went out to call Celine, she would be Celine Kirwan. But her father was Frank Vaughan, and he would be maybe a second cousin of my father's, you know. But He went away. She got shot at him anyway. When, I don't know. Or where he went, I don't know. I would like to know, you know, but
yeah.
Sometime maybe I'll eventually find out, you know. But that was the end of the story with him anyway. And I suppose she had to struggle on and try and rear a crowd of wins and whatever amount was in it, and she worked and worked away. But she had no education, she couldn't read or write, but she could sing and she could recite anything, or she could tell you stories for a month. That was her, you know.
Her name was?
Mary.
Mary.
Aye. Oh, she was. I remember her myself, you know, and she could, the Master Gala down there, he was, that's the man taught us in Dublin Rio, was from Gibara, and he taught here, taught in Fannett first, but he used to go into her very, very often to get Irish names and Irish stuff and old songs and recitations, you know.
She was a native Irish speaker.
She was. She had the best Irish, you know, and all these men went into her, you know, and talked to her. For a woman that had no education or couldn't read or write, but she had it all in the head, you see.
She had a lot of old knowledge and folklore and...
What?
She had a lot of old folklore and stories.
She could tell you amount of stuff, you know. Stuff that she would tell you and nobody had any interest in it at the time, you know. But it was a pity it was all lost. You know?
Awful sin, yeah.
It was just a pity it was all lost, you know. But she was great at recitations and songs and telling stories, you know. And a very religious woman. She went to the chapel every morning. There were two other characters used to come out of the bottom, out of Downing's. Shamath Ward. He came from Tory Island, and he had his family in Downing's, but he was with the Bord Iskiwara, you know. And another man that used to come up, Joe Boyce, he had a shop in Downing's. That would be the present bishop's father. Joe Boyce, he was of Scotch, I think he was Scotch, you know, and he used to come up, and the usual routine in the morning, all these fellas, you see, and women doing the Stations of the Cross, the terrible big Stations of the Cross in the chapel, you know, and anyway, there was some kind of a do in the chapel, and my father was in with Mrs. McCloskey. She was a religious woman, and she says to my father, she says, "What about the Stations of the Cross today, the money that go around them?" He says, "I think Shamath Ward and my mother in for the final." But that was their goal the whole time, every morning. And then they're doing the, what do you call it, in the evenings, around the time of the October, time of the dead, doing the visits. That cut out too. They used to do that too as well. That was all stopped. Holy Hour, devotions, that was all stopped. It was just back to the old routine, one Mass Sunday morning, that was the end of it, you know. And Mass in the morning, and Mass at 11:30.
So, Paddy, you went to Devon Rhea School, you
I
said?
Did. Aye.
How far away would that be from?
It would be about 3 miles from here.
Yeah.
Went on an old car, because the master had a car before the war, you see. So what you call a 14.9 an old Ford. And he had the Duffys and me and Dipper, and I had a full load to the school, you see.
Oh, so you got a lift to the school with them.
Aye, but right. Then when the petrol living got scarce, we had to cycle it. You see, went on bicycles then. And Gordon Brad was up here, and I never bothered going here, and Kerry Gart was over there, and never went near that either. I went to, just from when I went to school, I stayed at it, you know. I stayed at school to 13 and I left it, because I discovered myself that, you know, it was only a waste of time staying there, because I was learning absolutely nothing. So.
And his name was Master Gallagher?
Master Gallagher, he was from Gibara. He was Gallagher from Gibara. And he married a woman in Fannett, she was frail. And they had Gerrit, and Sian, and Jim, Eileen, and May. There were five in it. May went to the join the nuns. Gerrit died there 2 years ago, and Sian's in America, and Eileen, and Jim's in London. And we stayed at school then, and he bought a bicycle. After the war was over too, or during the war years, and he bought a bike and he ended his days. He died from typhoid fever. And when he was at school teaching, he got sick. and he was vomiting, and he was at the fireplace, and he wasn't speaking to anyone, and me and this fella called Mickey Doherty washed it up and cleaned it up, and he sat on the chair, and I came in here for a doctor and tell the family. I got a chair, took him home. He went to Donegal town that night, 2 days after he died. He was only in 58 or 59 at the time. You know, we thought maybe he was an old man, but...
But he wasn't, no.
No.
But you didn't like school, Paddy, and you just...
No. I detested it altogether, because I'll tell you, after I left it, I realised that, you know, the whole thing was all wrong. We were taught something we didn't know nothing at all about, you know. Arithmetic, and if you didn't know, you were never queried at all. You were hammered, you were hit every day. That was the God Almighty's truth. You were just been, as the man says, you were there, and along with myself, there were several other fellas too, and they were been hit and get the stick too, you see. And man, yet he was severe with a stick, it was what you call a black Sally.
For no apparent reason.
No apparent reason at all. Go round behind you and hit you like that with her hand, across the ears. And I remember when after the school reunion, the youngsters, somebody suggested send some of the older class down to the people that went to that school, and we had five or six that went down, and they asked us the questions, you know. Had we girlfriends and had we this? I says, no, no such thing as girlfriends or nothing in our time there. I says, you had to abide by the rules and regulations. And if you missed a day or two, the guards would be at your door to see where you were. And I says, these youngsters then wondered, you know, that we were at the school and that we were kind of under duress the whole time, you know. And getting hammered, this wee fella says to me, he says, and why didn't you leave? I says, where are you going to go? So you'll come home, and I says, you'll get a drubbing for not going back to school, and they'll tell you, well, only you deserved it, you wouldn't get it, you know. That was the kind of a sympathy they had for you.
It was cruel, like, you had no interest then, you hated going to school.
You hated going to school, and nearly everyone that was at school with me, even in years after that, left the school, you know, they had the same feelings as myself.
And did they, what was the general thing, did they go, were they hired out in the lagging, or?
No, in my time they weren't hired, but the older generation before that, they were hired, you know, and they got it tough too, but there were no schools much that time, what you call hedge schools. You'd be a local man teaching you behind the hedge there, you know, but some of them, now, fair dues to them, they'd done pretty well, you know. Some of them went away and they got good jobs and they married well, and some of them, just like myself, they just went on from day to day, you know.
So what did you do, Paddy, then, when you left?
I left school then, and I worked then on the greens down with Dr. McCloskey. He had a 9-hole golf links down here, and he was kind of in charge of it, and we worked away at that for a while, you know. I worked with him there, and different jobs, and then years after that, then I started electric work, wiring houses. But first of all, I drove a lorry first for a number of years. Worked over in a place called Baltnane.
Got a hark.
Baltnane, Mindery, and Suhan, and out up that country and up right. As far as Cashel and Gower.
Did you own the lorry, Paddy?
No, it belonged to a man down there called Mandy Gallard. And then, you know, the council that time, this lorry that he had what you call a plate on it from the Lost Wally Railway. And when you got a plate then, the council would hire to go maybe to Fannett or Rathmullen or West Donegal or wherever you're going, and that's the way that it would happen, you see. And anyway,
so you drove loads of gravel to
gravel the... that time, you see, there was what we grants for roads and
repair grants and
repair grants, you see, and there'd be two men working there, and the way that would happen, there'd be what you call napping stones. A man would shovel out a heap, mm-hmm. And there'd be another man sitting on a bag with a long shafted hammer, what you call a napping hammer.
Breaking them small. Yeah.
And then you'd be there maybe a couple of days taking them to different places, you know. Years before that, it was done by cart. You'd be sent down to Fannett in different places. But there'd be you'd be maybe a couple of months over there in Bartney, and maybe the same down in Fannatrath, Mullen, and way up outside Letterkenny. And there were no tipping gear on lorries that time, and there were no diggers, no nothing. It was all hand on, you know. But the charge per day for a small lorry was around about, roughly, it wasn't £4 for the day, for the day's hiring, you know. We were working in, and you'd work for the full week for maybe £2.10 or £3, you know.
And the tough work as well.
Oh, yeah. Aye, and then
as you said, you didn't have a tipper, so you had to load it and unload it.
Aye, well, right enough, the fella that was driving the lorry didn't have to work, you know. We just sat there, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But it was monotonous old work too, you see, and. Then you got Petrel and Falcara, the station master was an Imagara, an MCK your own. He was a station master in Falcara, and you got Petrel there, and whatever it took to do for the couple of days, you know, you go down in the evening and fill the forms. That would do you then, you see, and you'd go then to Mickey Mulherent and got to Hork, and you got repaired on there. Mickey, that's a place called Bedlam.
That's right, yeah, yeah, I do, oh yeah.
Well, Mickey Mulherent had a wee garage there.
Yeah.
And a nice man he was. Mickey Mulherin and Pat Garrard was the first two men that bought two Dodgers in Donegal. They bought them in Dublin.
Dodge lorries?
Dodge cars.
Cars?
They were two nice cars, aye.
Right.
It took some money to buy a car that time.
Oh, it would, yeah.
So that was that. And then I'll tell you a story about two men that worked with the council too, you see, and they'd be filling and filling away. They were one of them very, very, very witty. And Sullivan that time had what you call a Hillman Minx car. And he was the engineer, and he lived in Port na Blair. So anyway, there were always these cars passing up down during the summer months to the bog, what we called the hill. I don't know why they called it the hill here, they called it the bog in Creasley. But anyway, this boy was working with us, John Shales, who was called John Owen Van. And every turnabout when I was up, car passed, you see, they called this lower part of the downies here, they called it the bottom, do you understand? So he would turn around and say to John, is that a bottom man? No, I'm wrong, he would say. Is that a hill man? No, it's not. And who would it be? John would say, it's a bottom man, you know? But anyway, the story went on, and John was working away, and he was working in an old drain, and there were bushes, and there were roots, and there were everything in it. And he says to this boy, God, he says, if we had a hatchet, he says, we'd cut them old roots, you know, and they were dabbing away with an old spade. And this wee man says to John, he says, man, he says, I had a queer hatchet, he says, and there were a man stole it, but I have a fair idea, he says, the man that stole it. John says, you have. You have the idea, but he is a hatchet. You know, it was wild witty.
Yeah, you had good crack like that. Yeah.
They were great characters, you know. But then he would drink, and he would get very, very ratty and rough, you know.
He would change into a different
kind of a man altogether. But, you know, they were very, very, very witty, you know. Oh, God Almighty, save us.
So you stayed doing that work for a couple of years, Paddy?
Aye. Then I started then with Paddy Boyce wiring houses from Dunfanny down through Fannett and all over the country.
Right, so Paddy was an electrician, like you?
Who? Paddy Boyce had a shop down there. That's the supermarket.
Right.
And then he was buying wire and stuff, and he got me and two other fellas to do a bit of wiring for him, you know.
And where did you learn to?
I didn't learn it at all. I just went on and started. It wouldn't be complicated, but you know, the same things today, and only you have to fill a lot of forms and one thing and another, and recce registered and all the rest of it, you know, and it's the same thing, lights, plugs and all that, you know. And
a lot of houses weren't wired at all, so you
would go into these houses, you know.
Yeah.
And you went, I'll tell you, it was rough, you know. Some of the houses were unbelievable, you know, the state of them. You had to tear up stairs, old houses, and full of mice and rats and everything, you know. But went on from that. Then I worked with Johnny McGitty, and then and we used to do plumbing and wiring with Johnny, and bits of carpenter work and like so these small houses, you'll be hanging doors and putting in floors and you know the general routine of being it. Wouldn't be a yeah. Winter. That time there were no modern units had been built in at all. It'd be just an old jaw box out in the
that's
back
right,
and
yeah.
A tap for water and oh, that's the way that the whole thing went, just you carried on like that down the years, you know.
But you were a handyman and you learned it.
Well, I just picked everything yeah. up, you know. I mean, there were more knowledgeable people at it than me, but I mean, what you done your best.
You could turn your hands to anything, Paddy.
That's what it, you see. You done your best and you went on from that. And even when we worked in Ballyshannon, at a house, well, that was the only house we worked in Ballyshannon, that's a long time ago. We stayed there at night, you see, or stayed there during the day, and we stayed there for the week. And when the week was up, we came home on a Saturday then, and you got paid every fortnight. You got £11 every fortnight for work, that was it. But it was good enough, you know.
Yeah, I suppose at the time, Paddy, that it was fine, you know.
It was, surely. I mean, there were no money, and there were very few contractors, you know. There were no contractors in abundance like they were there today.
No.
Not at all. And the pay wasn't big, and they put on a stamp, and then if you were become redundant, you got a couple of months' stamp money, you know. But nobody had any money. Everyone just on the same wavelength as yourself, you know.
But you started to see a bit of improvement when the electricity came in. Like
everything kind of changed after that.
It changed the whole world, you could say.
Changed the whole thing, surely, to heavens. And younger people, you know, they went on for different things like computers and one thing and another, you know. And I suppose they had a better life every way, you know. When we would come in from school, you'd be lucky to get a couple of spuds for your dinner, and you wouldn't be starved anyway, you know. But there were no elaborate stuff. There were no women galloping to shops buying tinned food and stuff like that. You know, you'd go down the street and you'd buy in the evening, well, you were so close to the shop, you see, it was nearly shopping every evening or every night. A quarter of tea, 2 pounds of sugar, half a pound of butter. There were an old one had a shop down the street there, and you'd cut the half pound of the lag and butter just through the paper and all the way accord, you know.
Yeah.
You're two big long nails and you see the track of the two fingers and like that, and you'd cut through the butter and you see her licking the two fingers.
She wasn't too worried about hygiene or?
No such thing as hygiene at all.
No complaints and coming back.
You would go down then and you'd get a lock of stuff for your hands, pullet or whatever it was, and washing soda, and that time there'd be maybe a bag of flour standing in the corner. And the women would be baking a scone or pancakes or that, you know. And it was very seldom you seen a loaf coming into a house, you know. It was
all home baked. Yeah.
A scone in the oven and the coals on the top of the lid. And maybe a pan scone, which would be a lot flatter, and then pancakes during, you know.
But Carrigart at that time, you know, it's a beautiful lady, and you would see a lot of visitors coming, though, Paddy.
There were very good visitors came.
And this hotel right opposite.
Well,
you
there were a lot of people came to that hotel during my time, and I used to, when I was a young fella, fixing punctures and washing cars, you know. There were Doolans from Dublin and Stoneys. They were a doctor, and you had O'Hagans, and you had numerous other ones, you know, and they were of good class, and they were decent people, you know.
They were the regular visitors.
They were the regular visitors every year, and then there came another bigger class to Rosa Penna, you know. They were wealthy people, two English people. And then when Catherwood had Rosa Penna, when he bought it, he'd done away with drink. He was one of these men that was saved. He wasn't going to have drink in it, you know.
What was his name?
HMS Catherwood.
Catherwood?
Aye. He had that HMS in front of it. And right. He bought Rosa Penna from old Leitrim. And
So Leitrim was the original owner.
The third Earl built it. He was the name of Charles. He was the name of Robert Birmingham. And when before he built that, he went out to Norway, picked the timber for the hotel. Now was I don't know what advanced stage it was at that time.
It was all a wooden structure, though.
Mostly, aye. Yeah. To the back, but he died out there. And still the hotel was, the Merton carried on with it, you know. And they were good visitors coming there, you know, in years gone by, the like professional men like Harry Warden and all that, and these men came. You know, I used to hear tell them, talking about them, and to the golf course and that. And they were coming for years, but as I was going to say, then when he done away with all the drinking there, they used to come up in the evening and have their drink down here in Miss McGuire's, that's the hotel. And they would buy their drink there too and take it down with them, you know.
Right. So it was an advantage to Miss McGuire and the Carrigart Hotel. Yeah.
Aye. So then she sold it in the, you know, I can't just, I don't know that it when it was sold, but then Dermot Welsh bought it. And then she had a place, she had a pub in Letterkenny, the Rainbow Bar, and she bought Fricks and Rosbeg. She was there a while. I don't know how long she was there, you know. But Welsh then has that, and he still has it, you know.
And how old is that hotel, that Carrigart Hotel?
It must be. I remember working in it now, and I come on old names in it. You're talking about maybe a couple of 100 years.
It would be easy, yeah. It would have been, I'd say, well, you'd know better. Would it have been owned by Mr. Leitrim or Lord Leitrim?
No, it was started by Mickey Frail.
Right.
Aye, and he came from Glenree over there, and he had a family. And then the bank took it over, our old Osborne, and it went down the chute, you know, because they were a young family, and, you know, in those days there were a lot of headaches trying to run a hotel, run a pub, and he had a mill down there threshing for the country, you know, upstairs, up on the left, and a lot of people in those days, just like what they are today, suppose they'd just say thank you, and that was the end of the story, and it was, those young ones was maybe kind of, you know, they were kind of harum scarum at the time, you know. But it was Dr. McCloskey, old Miss McGuire, bought it. And Dr. McCloskey was married to the sister. And anyway, as the story goes, he put so much money into it along with her, because he was from County Derry and he had a farm in there. And he had a brother in there. And he sold the farm to the brother. And he put the money in along with her and into the hotel. And they run it then for while she was there, to Welsh bought it. And it was a very good, you know, she catered for, that time you had a lot of commercial travellers coming.
You would, yeah.
To
yeah.
shops. And they stayed there maybe for 2 or 3 days, and you had a manageress then in later years. But the only such thing as chickens or nothing at all, frozen fruit or nothing coming.
No.
They had cows there, and Tommy would milk the cows, and he had a wee man. They called him Joe the Hen, and he would supply the herring, the hens. He would be plucking them and killing them within the gate. You know?
So you had fresh food on the table,
you
like
had,
yeah,
and spuds, yeah. You know, and there were no such thing as anything, you know. There were no such thing as wagons coming round. That the only lorry you'd see coming was a trolley lorry with barrels of stout, and the stout had to be bottled.
All
the
bottles,
beer had
yeah.
to be bottled. No such thing as beer on tap, you know, or what do you call it? This the
draft
beer, yeah. Or you know.
So you worked in the hotel yourself?
I worked in it. I at plumbing work in it, and one thing another. In later years, you know, but during Mr. McGuire's time now, well, my father worked in it, you know, out in the field and here and there, and doing fencing and one thing another. But a lot of local people worked there, you know.
Yeah.
But it was a good enough place, but there were always people about it, you know.
Of course, yeah. Paddy, we were on earlier now, we were on about the Rosapenna, and we were on about the third Earl, Lord Leitrim. You have a lot of information, and you've heard a lot of stories about Lord Leitrim.
Yes. Lord Leitrim was supposed to be a very, very violent man, and he had a lot of... The morning that he was murdered, I was told that he was going to evict somebody down in Fannet or someplace, you know. So that was the last morning he came up, but he was murdered then in Cratla by 3 Fannet men. Well, it was publicised after that, because we went down to Fannet the day that monument went up and memory of those men.
Yeah, a wee plaque you saw it.
At a cross.
Yeah,
I saw it. Kendrum at the lake.
I think it was September last year now.
Aye, well, I was right down there in a wee van, me and a fella down the street, there were 3 years in it, 4 hours in it. And I remember Big Manners Herity. He was from Downings, and he was giving a kind of an oration at it. He says, "And now your father," he says, "and a Hail Mary," he says, "and come in memory of the men," he says, "that killed the monster."
Yeah.
And that was all Irish too.
Oh, aye, yeah, yeah.
And Big Dimley Kelly was from South Donegal too. He was a schoolmaster, a big man, and he gave a kind of a running commentary on it too. And oh, there were a big crowd there, you know. But later people would say, well, he wasn't good anyway, you know. But you see that the ball at their own foot they could do as they liked.
Oh, yeah.
Any of those people of that time, like Doak Castle and all these castles, they done what they wanted to do, you know, and they done things that people are never knowing about, you know. But Sturt out here was a great character, you know. He'd be a grandnephew of him. Me and I was working out there, and he would comment on the whole thing and talk about it. He was an army man too, you know. He's out there now and he's over 90 years and he's bedridden, you know.
And
he's living out there now, and he wasn't at home, and his nephew's looking after him. The nephew would be a very nice man, I forget his name, but his mother was a sister of Sturt's, that present man that's there now. And his father was, I think, Rhodesian, and he was a Catholic, so that fella's a Catholic. And he's a brother, a priest, and Sturt was out at the ordinations, you know.
And what was the story? How did you hear it, like, in your folklore here? How did you hear the story? They made up a plan and found the three men.
They did, and they came across, they came across on a boat, and they came across from the Hawk's Nest. That's a place there, going down below the bakery. Between that and Kerry Keel, there's a place they call the Hawk's Nest. It's a big rock. You're standing along the road there. And these men then come together and propose to just end the story with Leitrim. And you're making wee shields and Herity. There were three, and they came across. And there were one of those men now, as far as I'm told, stayed out here in Terlahan for I don't know how long after that he came across, and he must have came down, you know. I suppose there was no law and order in the country, and Leitrim was a law and order, you know. Whatever kind of order it was, but...
You reckon Leitrim was going to go to evict people that morning?
He was. He was going to evict people, and was told, you know. And, he had to end the story with him anyway. There was somebody told me years gone by that he drew his last breath up on the other side of Bunlan. So that was a good bit from where they attacked him.
Yeah.
But you see, the type of stuff they had to shoot that time was what you call muzzle loaders packed with pepper and comics and butt owls, rubbish and...
Useless, and really.
But they reckon that the fatal blow was from the butt of that gun, you know. He
wore a vest, though, didn't he?
Oh, I did, surely to God, aye.
Bulletproof?
Aye. The last man was there was Charles Clemens, and he was the last Lord Leitrim. He'd be this man's uncle, Sturt's uncle. But I remember over in the chapel, and I remember it well, there were a father, what do you call him? He was a kind of dissident too. He was over in the chapel there, and he was here for a while. He was from the Rabala Buffet direction. And he said that for nobody to take any act or part in the burial of Lord Leitrim, because it was coming off in a day or two, do you understand?
Yeah.
But it was all Catholics was working in it, and it was them dug the grave and everything. But they paid no attention. There were more Catholics at the funeral than there were Protestants. And the first man on that gate down there was a priest. He was Father Logue. He was in Tory Island a while. And he was the first man, and he was up at the front of the church during the service. And he was there during the burial. He wasn't Rowan. He wasn't Father Rowan. Oh, I forget his name. But anyway, he was here, so now they didn't look very good for him. So what do you call your man? He was head of the farmers union up there, Major Chance. But Major Chance was a Catholic, and he was up there in the Lagan Valley there, and he was there for years. Somebody went to him anyway and told him the story, and he went to the Bishop McNeely. It wasn't McFeely now, Bishop McNeely, and told the story. So your man was shipped after that. He went away from here. That priest, Chambers was his name, Father Chambers. But it was all Catholics worked there, and I suppose down the years, what had they were there all the time working, and there were some of them, their grandfathers worked there, and right down to the present Lord Leitrim was there, you know. Yeah. There were a lot of people worked, you know.
So where is this old home?
Manor House, you mean?
Yeah.
It's out there in the wood, out there. You'd see part of it coming down from the Red House from Carrick on the Mulford Road there, you know. It's down on the very point. There's a few old houses on the estate, you see, too.
And Strutt still lives there, does he?
The last time I heard of him, he was in the home in Mulford now, but I think this man has taken him out now, and whether he's there now or not, I don't know. But he was there. But this man used to come down there on a Sunday down towards the bridge when we were out there, you know. Strutt himself was all right, you know.
Yeah.
He was a good enough.
But one was arrested, wasn't he, like after the murder of Leighton?
Aye, they would be arrested, but they had no evidence right at all, you know. I suppose there was, some of them went to America, and one was supposed to die in Liffer jail, and what happened to the other man, I suppose, later years he disappeared too, you know. But they'll be partially on the run all the time, you know.
Yeah, but they kept it just quiet. And
oh, did they? It's only in later years that they realised then that they brought it to a top that, well, this monument in commemoration of the men, and that's what they were named, you know.
Oh, well, it doesn't matter now. No. Like, but that time they kept it just nice and quiet.
Not
and
surely. Oh, they
no,
kept
no information leaked.
No information. You know, it was a wild thing in those days, you know. I mean, he was a law, and he was a man above the board, but man above law, you know.
Yeah.
What he'd done or said was, that was that, you know.
But he evicted a lot of people, and I suppose things were building up.
Surely. He evicted people, surely, to heavens and tumbled their houses and got rid of them. The same happened in Glenveagh, you know.
Yeah.
Glenveagh.
Do you know of areas in Carrigart or further down Downings that he did that?
No. Funny, I don't. No. Now, the most of the problems would be in Fannett, I would say, but none of around this area. Now, Glenveagh was a different story.
Oh, completely, yeah.
It was. Father McFadden, he was at the Glenveagh evictions. He would be, in later years he went to Glenties.
Father McFadden, who was in Gwydor before Glenveagh? Yeah.
He would be, that's Father McFadden, would be a great-great-granduncle of Mary's there.
Of your Mary?
Aye.
My God.
Aye.
I never heard of him being in Glenveagh, but I'm not doubting you.
There's another Father McFadden over here. He was arrested in Derry. Arrested and he got jailed in Derry for, there was a man shot at the chapel over in he was a policeman, and he was arrested that time, Father McFadden. He was in Gidor at that time, and when he came out of Derry jail, the Gidor people had a banner. I seen the banner.
Did you?
There, aye. She was Gunnar, the woman that had it, and it was written Irish, "Welcome home," and his name and all, McFadden, and a painting of him in the middle of the banner.
Where did you see the banner, Paddy?
It was over in that big house at the foot of Claggett. She's got her, and she went away to America. And she used to come every year. And I don't know whether she's dead or not, but that banner was worth a fortune the day. It was painted by the people in Gidor.
Right.
And it was there when he came home.
So, Paddy, it was Inspector Martin that came?
Martin,
yeah.
That's the man.
And Father McFadden was a parish priest in
Gidor. He was a parish priest, yeah. And I suppose the maintained he was kind of keeping the whole thing going, maybe, you know. And
so they came to arrest the priest, like?
Aye, well, now that priest was a different man to the... Mary's other uncle was buried in Gortaork, who's Father James or Father Hugh. It was him with that new graveyard up on the left-hand side. You know, you know when you go into Gortaork and you...
I do, yeah.
Up there on the left, that when he was there, it was him got that graveyard, made that graveyard. He's buried over there. And the other brother's buried up at Clare. He was Dinner for Foe. He'd be a great granduncle of Mary's too as well. They came from over there at Duntally. There were two, and then there were an old priest in it before that too. Now he was a very old man, he had a beard on him. What they called him, I don't know. But there must have been money in it at those days.
There must have been, yeah.
Because there was, because in late years, there were some books in it wrote in Irish, and some of these clergymen of the day, you know, when they were into old people, they got anything they wanted, and there were books there, very valuable. There were a chalice in it, there were clerical clothes and all that, and the whole thing went. And there was a photograph, there was a priest in it, Mary could tell you about it. There was a man, he was a, what do you call it, down there in Falkirk with the nuns at the convent, Sir John Alford. Did you ever hear tell
him? Oh, it's that, yeah.
Well, Sir John Alford supposed to have a very good cow and she had a calve with a bulldog's head on it. Now that's what they say. So this clergyman was called upon. He sent up his men on a horse and trap, and he says the only thing to be done with it, he says, is to have to be put down, and he wanted it buried in the grounds down there, wherever it is, I don't know, down at Ballyconnell. And anyway, he gave Father McFadden sideboard for the same asset down in the room, still in a three drawers, and it's high, you know, different, higher than a table. And he gave him a picture of himself, Sir John Alford, for I seen it in the room. But when Ali was married to Pat and Eddie, Ali got the picture of Sir John Alford, and she put a large picture in front of it. And Sir John Alford was in that picture. I seen it.
That's him?
Aye. Aye, Ali, and that unit, I would say, still over in that old house, that old bench, or what do you call it, for saying mass on. But, you know, people forgot all that, and I suppose they don't care about it anymore, you know.
No.
Aye.
So did you then stay working on electrical work and construction throughout the county?
Well, not out the county, just from between here, Creasley, Dunfanaghy, and
across to Fannet, even.
In Fannet and Milford and
surrounding areas.
Surrounding areas, yeah. You know.
But now you can turn your hand to anything, Paddy. I've seen your workshop and.
Aye, well, just I kept puttering away at everything, you know. I wouldn't be what you call an expert. But what I would do, I'd try and make a good job, you know that. But anyway, there were no chances nowadays, there were no techs or nothing. We never went to a tech, and you got no chance in one way or another. There were the odd few that went on the bus, and the tech that time was Letterkenny, you know.
That's right.
It took money to send you to Letterkenny, you know. You got a ticket, and, well, I suppose there were nobody in my time went to the tech. Because they wouldn't go to Letterkenny, you know. It was just clean out of bounds, you thought it was too far away. But it's funny, you see, I got a piece of a, what do you call it there? It was wrote in the Creasna Journal last year. She was Mary McGee from Derry Hereford. She taught in Derry Hatton School in 1912 or so. And by God, the teaching profession or whatever it was in Dublin at the time, wherever it came from, to the priest down here, Father Boyle, to get her to resign from the teaching profession down there. And she was sacked because she was an active woman in the Coming the Man, and they've got some paraphernalia hanging on the handle of the bicycle like a flag or something, you know. And she went over to Tillinger over there. And she taught 3 years free gratis for nothing. She never got no pay. And she's dead a number of years, but she was married to a Cork man, you know. And she was a good music teacher, and she was a very good, she passed with full honours in all Ireland when she passed her exams for teaching. There's photographs in there. I was asking different ones, you know, and the McGee's live over there, but there are none of them now. They couldn't get the relations, you know, but it'd be interesting to get the relations. But I was telling a fellow out here, he worked in Rosapenna. Well, man, he says, that's funny, he says, because he says, I know two daughters of her that came to Rosapenna every year on holidays. That Mary, but she would be, her name now is through my head, I forget. She was married to a Corkman anyway, but she was a clever lady. But that shows you what they'll do in those days, too.
Oh, of course, yeah. Eh? Yeah. But okay. You saw a bit of poetry written by her, Paddy, did you? And the Creasla.
I think you might have to die. She was a great woman, you know. But I don't know where they got the information, because Mary there has relations, they're living there ahead of, and there would be McGee's, Cahill McGee. But now I must ask Cahill when I see him, would he be anything to them, you know? Because sometimes they might tell you, you know, though, and other times they'd be very reluctant in telling you anything, you know.
You know bits of information as well about Doncaster, Paddy, and...
Eh?
You know bits of information about Doncaster.
Very little about Doncaster now, very little. They tell you different things about it, but now the man says, I wouldn't know very much at all. The older people knew a lot of stuff about Doncaster, you know, but as I say, the relations of Mary is buried down in that old graveyard, you know. Down there in that old graveyard beside the castle. Aye. Ah, so piles of stuff so post compiled years gone by about the castle, but there'd be a lot of kind of, what would you call it? There'd be a lot of true and a lot of not true, you know.
The chieftains of Dole, like Bob Boyles.
McSweeney's and McSweeney's, yeah. Boyles and all that. But I didn't know very much about it, now tell you the truth. No, I would not. But God Almighty, there were some stories told about old Littleman and what he did do and all that.
Yeah.
And then we had a man in here, Cairnalogue. Lived down there where the three new houses are now, and there's a house beside it, what you call the Credit Union.
Oh, yeah.
Well, Cairnalogue's house was there. And his father was a blacksmith, and they reckon that it was him drove the nail into the horse's foot the morning the horse went lame, or something like that, you know.
When Lord Leitrim was killed.
Aye. And his Cairnalogue's father and mother and her sisters buried over in that old graveyard over there in Umla. And he put up a headstone over the mother and father and the sister. She was married to a man from Glenties, Byrne, I think they called him. And she's buried over there too. He'd be probably working at the chapel at the time, you see. He came out a stonemason. And Cairnalogue then, he was death against some of these writers too. What did you call your man who was the writer in Glenties up there? Or?
Patrick McKell.
Aye. Those men had to make their living, they had to go. Because
that's right.
Because they couldn't publicise anything. Because
no.
As a man says to me, he says, probably, he says, that man never read McGill's book, Cairnalogue.
No.
But he says, it was too touchy and then you get rid of him.
That's right. And that's exactly the way it was. Patrick McGill had to leave the country, sure. And now, when he was dead and buried, he's a famous man.
They have a
festival and all this nonsense.
Sure, it's like Robbie Burns.
Yeah,
Robbie same. Burns was a genius, you see. And there's a fellow out here, McFadden Patrick, he teaches in Quebec University. And he says, anything in connection with Robbie Burns, he says, was down a multitude in where he is. Because he says, they abandoned him altogether because he was rough, you know. But he was a genius in his
of course,
time,
yeah.
You know.
And so was Patrick McGill.
Ah, sure.
Yeah.
And
but we went off the story of Leitrim again, Paddy.
Aye. Well, he I reckon what he wanted, if a young person got married, that he would have to have the first night with a woman, you know. And I reckon that this girl become pregnant, and anyway, she worked with him down here, and I reckon that she was married down in a place they call Rinyanyan, that's down there at the point below the manor house. And they say that was his downfall from the descendants of Heron Fannet.
I bet you it's true, yeah.
You know, yeah. Because I mean they were ruthless, and they were above they're above everything, you know, and they done everything they could possibly do, yeah. You know. And it's quite possible that's what happened.
That it sparked the Fannet men to just go.
Oh, definitely, yeah. Aye. Oh, it did surely to heaven.
Yeah.
Well, then there was another man in Belfast there. Did you ever hear tell him? He was related to Mary too. He was Moor. He was Moor from Belfast. He was a writer. He died out in Canada. He wrote a lot of stuff too that wouldn't please the hierarchy. I forget his first name now.
Thomas?
No.
No.
What's this they called him now? The brother used to be, come in here. He was a doctor in Belfast. What the hell did they call him? Seamus Moor.
All right.
Seamus Moor.
I should have known that one.
Aye. He used to write a lot of stuff too, you know. And I suppose it was touchy programs too, and they didn't want him to write in a lot of stuff either, you know. But Leitrim was a bad man now, and there was nobody died during the famine under his jurisdiction anyway.
No, I bet you.
No.
Yeah.
They say that he'd done the dictation, you know.
Yeah.
Hey boy.
Paddy, tell me about the old church down there in Carrickyard.
This Church of Ireland?
Yeah.
There was an old church there before that. It was a church, but during the time that the people put up that monument in commemoration of Lord Leitrim, that would be Charles Birmingham, Robert Birmingham, there was an old church there, you know, with a bell on the end of it, but that church went up about the same time as the Presbyterian Church and the Catholic Church. Maybe there were just a few years between the whole lot, you know, 120 or something odd years. But there was an old church there then at that time, and that's when that headstone went up, you know, the cross. And the Presbyterian Church, they weren't known, but it was built out here at that time too. The Presbyterian minister of that day was the name of Buglass, and that was the centre out there. They still have it there. He died out there, and then he had a son, James, died in Ruffo. He was a Presbyterian minister. But there were a lot of ministers down here down the years now, as far, I can remember back as far as right. And I don't remember Vance, he was here 40 years. And then there was a man called, not White, was it? No, Murphy. He lived for a while in Doak Castle before he had come to here to live down in this rectory. He was a Protestant minister. And he used to keep, this was the land all over here, he kept sheep in that, or it was told. So anyway, That church down there would be built around the same time as the chapel in Carrickyard, you know. That chapel was built because the old chapel in Umla, the tide was coming up that far and was encroaching on the building.
Right, so.
And this was, they suggested building a new chapel. Now, they were 20 or 20 odd years building that chapel, and they were a while at it and they went out of money, so. There were a lot of money then sent out to America to complete it, you know. And they completed the chapel. And there never was no money, there never was no debt, you know, it was paid for. But a lot of stuff came out of America in those days to subscribe towards it, you know. then Monsignor McLaughlin came here, he was from Ballyshannon, he tore the inside out of it, he sold the statues and candlesticks and tore the altar out of it, and the porches and all, made a complete and utter hems of it, you know. It was a shame and a disgrace, you know.
Yeah, he made his own rules, like, and...
Made his own rules and didn't listen or take dictation from nobody, you know. But which was very, very sad, because you go into the old cathedral and nothing ever was touched.
No.
You know.
So it lost a lot of character with the old stuff, you know, being put to dirt.
There were a lot of children. Well, this man here, Father Charlie Byrne, he came here and he brought it all back, you know. Another thing is in his mind is to bring the altar the way it was, you know, facing down the chapel. But for one thing over there after he came here, I don't know how long he was here, and I says to him, Mrs. McCloskey down here had run a wee factory, that was the old doctor's wife, and she bought Stations of the Cross, that were what you call this modern day art, hammered into copper. And they took down the big paintings and they put these cowboys up on the wall, you know. And anyway, I said to Father Charlie Byrne, you know, I don't know as anyone around the Stations of the Cross, but I would remind you of what was happening. Or what did happen. And I says, the paintings were down in a shed, and I says, why not get them put back? Well, he says, they need to be touched up. Well, I says, get them touched up. He says, it'll cost money. Well, I says, anything that anything, artifacts in the chapel that has to be repaired or fixed, people will always pay. And he got them all done, the cost of about €400 a time down in Limerick.
And to clean up and prepare.
And put them all back again in the chapel. And it's in keeping with the chapel, because they're very big.
Yeah.
And they're a wee cross on the top. And they were all hand-painted.
That was Shemeth, a good idea, Paddy.
Ah, Shemeth got around here, the undertaker, he says to me, and what'll they do with the other ones? He says, I, do you know what you'll do with them, Shemeth? I says, take them to the scrapman, I says. Yeah, nobody, I says, my God, people, I says, doesn't know a goddamn what's on them. You know, old hammer copper.
Yeah.
You know.
Punched, yeah.
They'll be all right in cities or in... Yeah. Places where there'll be young people, but you know, it was a distraction for the older people to stop seeing the Stations of the Cross.
I know.
But my God, these just suited the part, you know.
It did, of course. Paddy, do you have, we'll conclude soon, but do you have wee stories, fairies, about the fairies, Paddy? I'm sure you do.
Well, I heard two or three different types of stories. There were a wee girl, and this is not a lie.
No.
A wee girl, she was come from school from Glasson, and her uncle was taking home turf across the river up in a place called Glen Haw. And she went up, and the first thing she says she met was this wee woman dressed in this peculiar garb. And she says, where are you going? And I'm going over to my uncle. She says, don't bother yourself going there. She says, go home, where you get drowned in the burn. And she turned and she went back home. Now she was dirty. Not yelling out a nurse, and she told that, and many times she did tell it. There was a woman up there that called Mary McLafferty, and she was married to a man that called McLafferty. No, she was married to a man that called McLafferty. And the father was up, and it's a kind of a slope field coming down into the river like that. And he was what you call moulding spuds with a horse, you know.
Yeah.
And she went over like that, and when she went over like that to the field, this wee woman was standing at the rock. And she had a apron on her, and she was red, and she was green, and everything, and very peculiar. And she started to cry then, and the father says, what's wrong? She says, I've seen a wee woman coming out from on the rock. And it has something very funny about it, that place, because it's a kind of a valley, and the river's going down, and you know, it has an eerie feeling about it.
Yeah.
And she's dead and gone, the creature, but... Anyway, she saw that. But I was going to tell you about, we were working down with a Mrs. Wilson Moltke down at the tide there. Me and Charlie McFadden, it was Charlie Weehill. And on a lovely summer's evening, that's going back 20, 25 years ago. And a lovely summer's evening, and this woman stepped out of the car, and this man came out, and a big Yankee and a hat on him, and a big camera. He says, this is the house, he says, with a $1 million view. He says, that's the greatest sunset, he says, I've seen. And we started to quote him where he was from, someplace in Arizona he was. And he says, I never seen a sunset, he says, and I'm living in America a long time. and I forget what his name was, but anyway, he was over with her sister in Scotland. She was buying bulls, she had cattle, and he told me his name and all, and what's your profession, Charlie, says. He says, I'm the head, he says, chaplain on the American forces, he says, I'm the head Protestant chaplain. And Charlie says next to him, do you believe in fairies? Yes, he says, why? He says, everyone believes in fairies. And he started, and he knew more about fairies than we did. And he took photographs of us with a big camera, and he had a Rolls Royce with him. And you're talking about an evening's entertainment. That man, he never went near the house to Mrs. Mulkey or to the sister or nobody. He says, I have no time for that. He says, I'd like to, he says, to be here, he says, amongst you people, he says, where I can understand and know what we're talking about, you know. And that went on for a long, long time. But anyway, he left, and that was the end of the story. There used to come very prominent people down there, like Tahara was what do you call your man? He was the main man in Northern Ireland, Captain Terence O'Neill. And that playboy, he was a kind of a poof, he was from over there, he was a painter. What do you call him? who left his place? Derek Hill.
Oh, yeah.
And a lot of these kind of boys. But there were big meals there all the time. And your man used to come down. The boy that had Glenway, Michelani. But I'd be down there. I remember she had a sore back, and I drove her up to Glenway many a time with the car that she had. But we worked down there anyway, and she was married. And she was married two or three times, and she was divorced. And she had a daughter then that was married to a man. And she had a daughter, and she started to go with a man they called Von Bulow. He was a diplomat. And he was married himself in America. And he was going on this one, and he administered whatever it was, these drugs, to the wife, and she's still in a coma, and will be in a coma to the day she dies. She was on insulin or whatever it was, and anyway, she was going with him, and he's back down in England. He got off the hook anyway. How he got off, I don't know a damn. But that was a very big case. You might have maybe remember it.
No, I don't, actually.
He was a German diplomat, Von Bulow, and he never was down there, but she was down. She had some wee actor part to do in some kind of a little soap opera in America. But that's now got to 20 years ago.
Yeah. Well, Paddy, I took you away from your work, and...
Well, is there any time at all you want to come over to come over?
I certainly will. You've got a lot of stories. This is only the start of your stories.
That's all, aye.
Yeah.
Well, there's plenty more, you know.
When I leave now, you'll think of a lot more, and you'll say to yourself, it's a pity I didn't tell him. But I'll be back, Paddy, and I'll keep in touch with you.
Oh, keep come back any time at all, and I'll find out about the archives and Letterkenny about the stuff that the old one had.
Yeah, I'd appreciate that.
I'll find out about it. See, I was speaking to Sean the last day, you see, and he told me, he says, "Have you upstairs?" Well, I don't be in Letterkenny much, you know.
No.
But I'll find out about it, you know.
Okay, Paddy, go to my
Go to my